Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m, and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey, and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is visually impaired stand-up comedian and actor Georgie Morell, who also presents our movie music show, Sounds of the Silver Screen. Hello, Georgie, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So, Georgie, how did you find it selecting your tracks then?
It's the hardest thing in the world, Toby, and I bet everybody you have on says that. Tracks of My Life, it's like the biggest question. It's like being asked your favourite film or your favourite food. It's just huge. But it's also a great pleasure because how often do we really stop and have a good look at our lives and what we've done and what we've experienced? So I quite enjoyed that. It was quite indulgent.
Yeah, I think we all need time sometimes to look back on things. And your first track does take you back to early life. And it's obviously Brown Eyed Girl by Van Morrison, and a track that your dad, I think, played time and time again. What was early life like for you? And did you feel any different to your mates and school friends at that time?
I never felt different. I was diagnosed with arthritis, which followed on with glaucoma, uveitis. Apparently the two are connected. Don't ask me all the ins and outs, but that's the way of it. When I was three, so life changed very dramatically for me when I was quite young. But I had a wonderful upbringing. My mum, my dad, two brothers, lots of pets. And I was never raised as a disabled child. And by that, I mean, I was never given a label of any sort. I was just Georgie. My eyes were a bit weird. My knees were always a bit sore. And that's who I was. And having two older brothers as well is a great thing to have because they don't treat you any differently. You're still just their little sister who's annoying. They don't care. You've had eye surgery. And I think that's actually a very good thing. And I was never too self-conscious, but they raised me to be sort of proud of my what made me different and, you know, my scars inside and out. And so when Dad would sort of play that song for me, I think there was a little bit of me. I was like, yeah, my eyes are brown. I get why he plays this. But I was like, I know they're not like everyone else's. But he made sure I felt special and unique just by, you know, sort of dedicating one song to me. He actually sort of would play it thinking of my mum. She has beautiful brown eyes. And then I came along and stole it from her.
And what sort of memories come back to you when you hear Brown Eyed Girl?
Honestly, I could burst into tears, not with any sort of sadness, but with happiness, because it reminds me exactly how loved I am by my mum and dad.
You, my brown eyed girl, remember when we used to sing sha la 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 la, just like that.
Brown Eyed Girl there by Van Morrison. Georgie, we are now taken to your first album that you bought, and one by Metallica, I think. And I remember buying my very first album and having to walk a long way from school to the nearest record shop, which seemed a very long way as a young teenager. Where did you buy your first album from, and what was it like getting that album back home and playing it for the first time?
Well, it was Metallica, the Black Album, which I think everybody should own. It's one of the greats, but I didn't actually buy it. It was the first album I remember owning, and my eldest brother, Joe, was a huge fan of Metallica's, and he sort of gave it to me one day. He got it when things went from cassette to CD, and he then had got it on CDs. He upgraded, so just like, oh, you can have this thing. So he knew that I quite liked it, and I liked it because he liked it. You know, I just wanted to be cool like my brother. And he handed it to me, and I had a big sort of tape player thing. And it was great. I can visualize it now. It was so 90s. And I just played it to a death, and I kept it forever. Even by the time we were on, you know, digital music and stuff, it's probably tucked away somewhere. I think I liked the idea of my brother giving it to me. I think that meant something to me. And it also started a long love affair of going into the HMVs of the world and the Woolworths and raiding them for CDs you didn't have.
And what track have you chosen from Metallica's Black Album? And what does that track say to you? And does it have a different meaning now after all this time?
It's got to be Nothing Else Matters, really. It was actually quite recently, my partner told me this, Elton John said to James Hetfield, who's the lead singer of Metallica, that it's one of the greatest songs ever written. And apparently James Hetfield cried when he heard that. It made him so happy that this guy he had admired all his life thought how wonderful this song was. But I'm going off topic. The reason I like it is, one, my brother gave it to me, but everyone I talk to about the song, even the most passionate heavy metal lovers, it means something different to everyone. I think that's what a really, really good song should be, is you can interpret it as a complete individual and it means something to you. I think it is about never giving up. And that's not always the best way to be. But my best friend, Drew, who loves his music, especially rock music, he said, oh, I thought it was a love song. It's like, what two different ways of interpreting a piece of music.
Never opened myself this way. Life is ours, we live it our way. Only these words I don't just say.
Nothing Else Matters there by Metallica, and the first album you ever owned. The next track that you have chosen, Georgie, you say made you revalue live shows and live work. Do you mean actually going to see a live performance and the sort of things that you get from going to see a live performance?
Exactly. Seeing a live performance, I'm obviously biased because I am a huge part of my career is performing live as a stand-up and as an actor in theatre, and it means the world to me. It's my livelihood. But when I saw this band, the band is Rival Sons. They were opening for Lenny Kravitz at Wembley. I'm a huge Lenny Kravitz fan, but we won't get into that because it's for reasons that are a bit blue. And they were opening for him, and I didn't know who they were. I had no idea of them. And I was absolutely blown away. I just fell in love with them immediately. And I listened to their music all the time. And at the time I saw them, I didn't have a lot of money. And then when the pandemic hit, it was something that I really missed, seeing live work. So I sort of made myself a promise to put some money aside to go and see the bands and the musicians I really, really want to, on the grounds that I might discover another band like Rival Sons and fall in love all over again.
And when you go and see a performance, and maybe the first performance you ever went to see, did you feel like, oh, I could actually be up on stage and performing and doing stuff?
Oh, God, do you know what? I was such an arrogant little girl. My mum said I just arrived confident. I didn't even see work to know that I wanted to be on stage. I took my first steps on stage at primary school. I absolutely smashed it, if I say so myself. And then I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. That's great. And that was it. I was sold. It didn't even take for me to see somebody live. I was so full of it.
And when did your sort of performing career start then? How old were you when you first sort of got up and performed?
I did a play when I was about 10 at primary school, and I got such great feedback for it. That was it. I had the bug, as they say. I'd been bitten. That was it. I'd made my decision. I was like, I want to perform. And that never wavered, ever. Even, well, you know, as a stand-up comedian, every now and again, you'll, you know, absolutely bomb on stage. But you pick yourself back up and you get on with it. It's part of the process of creating good art.
And do you have to deal with hecklers and stuff and things like that? Have you sort of...
Oh, it's a misconception, Toby. Hecklers are never as bad as you think. Never. I can't recall ever really being heckled, like in a proper, you know, as you'd imagine, you know, bloke standing up at the back and, you know, saying something sexist or telling you that you're rubbish. That's never happened. The worst thing is when audiences are just really timid and they don't sort of like get stuck in. That's worse than a heckler. At least a heckler, you've got something to work with. But quiet, sort of quite timid audiences, you've really got to pull them out of their shells. And that can be quite hard work.
And what was it like hearing Jordan, this track by Rival Sons, for that first time?
Oh, it's such a moving track. It's one of their more slower, I guess, heartfelt tracks. And the way I interpreted it is I think it is about death and losing somebody. And I like, they're quite, I wouldn't call them heavy metal Rival Sons, but they're definitely on the heavier rock side, their music is. And then the ability to be able to play that sort of music and then write something with such feeling and depth, it just blows my mind, musicians, all of the time. I think I secretly wanted to be a rock star, to be honest.
The wolves look to the moon, and the ocean to the sky. I've looked to you my whole life.
Jordan there by Rival Sons, and a performance that gave you faith back in live work. We now move to a time when you moved away from your hometown to the big city. Why did you want or maybe need to move away from home, and what was life like in the big city when you first arrived in London?
I just wasn't made for suburbia where I grew up. It was a great upbringing and I definitely am proud of where I came from and that. But it just wasn't for me. I was ready to escape and I just wanted to get into trouble. I just wanted to experience everything about the world and life. And I went to London at 18, never looked back. And I almost wanted to experience the pleasure and the pain of moving to a big city. I wanted it all. I wanted to drink it all up. And it suited me down to the ground. Something about being in a big city, you can be anonymous. You can almost make mistakes quite freely and live as you want to. And in the big city as well, despite how I said how I was brought up, I have always felt a bit different, a bit weird. And in a big city, it's full of weirdos and you can just blend in with them and be yourself, which is surprising, I think, to people.
How did you manage getting around London for that very first time? Because I remember when I was at college and coming to see my brother who lived in London at that time. And I was going on the tube. I was going from King's Cross to Farringdon to a gallery to see an exhibition. And I didn't realise at the time that the Circle Line went round in a circle and it also went round in either direction, both east and west. So I went west instead of east and was on the tube for a very long, long time. Have you had any sort of experiences like that?
God, I love the tube. No, really, because I've always had a certain amount of independence, even with one eye. I've managed to get about pretty well. I'd say I avoid it when it is packed. That's when I struggle a bit because I can easily bump into people on my left side and that really irritates me. So I do avoid it then. And also if it's a station I don't know, I give myself a bit more time to navigate it. There's nothing worse than rushing and you're struggling to see as well and to manage. I recall actually, I lost the sight in my left eye when I was about 16 and my right eye decided to copy it for about a year when I was 21 and I was living in London at the time. And they fixed my eye pretty good after a while, some amazing doctors did. And I remember going back on the tube for the first time, having regained most of the sight I had lost. And it was actually quite difficult. My body was having to readjust in so many ways. It was like the sensory overload. And I didn't listen to music for ages. I didn't have my iPod in until I was confident again and could adjust. And I remember the first time putting my iPod in and listening to something and proper strutting my stuff down a tube platform again.
What is the track that takes you back to those early days of moving from your hometown and starting to live in London?
Bright Lights by Matchbox 20. The song itself is about a girl getting on a train and going to the city. I think that's fairly clear in the lyrics. But the caveat for me is my older brothers, Sam and Joe, we've been to see Matchbox 20 twice altogether, the three of us. It's always been an absolute riot. They're the funniest guys I know. The only reason I have a career as a comedian is because they were so funny to grow up with. I listened and sort of made a mental note of everything that was hilarious. I made the choice to go to the big city, and I didn't leave them behind as such. You know, they're still my brothers, but there was that bit of distance, and I missed their company and growing up with them. Every day, the ease of having them there, and as well, two big brothers, and I'm a girl. They're, you know, my constant protectors. You know, as long as they were there, I was always safe. But I wanted to go out and do it on my own and prove myself. Sometimes with older siblings, you're a bit in their shadow as well. At school, I was always referred to as Joe or Sam's sister, and it took me a while to sort of carve out my own name. So I very much wanted to do that, and I think a little bit of me wanted to make them proud. And the fact that we all love this band together is all the more sweeter.
She got out of town on a railway New York bound, took all except my name, another alien.
Matchbox 20 there, and Early Life in London for you, Georgie. Now, we come to a track by an artist that I think you say you would have wanted to have had when you were a slightly confused teenager. Why do you say this? As I think most of us, when we were teenagers, were felt probably slightly confused and maybe slightly worried about life. But looking back now, you know, life perhaps wasn't so bad. But I wondered, you know, sort of why you feel that you would have liked this track as a confused teenager.
Lana Del Rey is, to me, just one of the greatest female artists of possibly all time. She writes poetry. It's not just music. And there's something about what she writes that if you do feel like you are the odd one out, that you aren't alone. And I was, like most teenagers, in a total mess, like we all are. But I do feel that I had to manage a disability as well from a young age. And that, I think, ages you a little bit. And there's something about Lana Del Rey's music that I think she is an old soul. I think you'd have to be able to write what she does. And if only I could have had that when I was 15, 16, to make me feel as if somebody got it. And I wasn't alone, that would have been wonderful. And I think would have helped me a lot. There were other sort of female artists at the time, but we grew up that sort of period. It was very much the pop starlets. There's something that she says, and it's the song that you're going to play. She talks about freedom, that she's obsessed with being and just feeling free. And that's something I really wanted in my teens and have carried into adulthood. It's just that feeling of being free, because I think when you do have a disability and you are reliant on, in my instance, eye drops, hospital appointments, surgeries, different things, medications, immunosuppressant, you know, it's that it's constantly the monkey on your back. You just want that to ease for a bit, to feel free. Probably why I've made certain decisions in my life as well, to make sure that there isn't anything else weighing me down. But as I've gotten older, I've found an ease in my disability as well, that it's actually a great thing to have, and there's freedom within it.
Yeah, because I think you do feel, you know, so when you look back, and certainly, you know, I have the same feeling, I think, because, you know, now I'm quite happy with myself, but as a teenager, I wasn't so happy with myself. And I think we all go through that, and we look back and think, oh, it's like, if only I knew then what I know now, I would have perhaps done differently.
Yeah, I wish I'd listened to, you know, the advice I was given, particularly from my mum, who said, you know, you won't, you know, this won't matter, you know, all of these things that you don't like about yourself are gonna be great. I was very small, I'm still small as well. I'm quite short and quite petite, and I hated that as a teenager. And it's something that I've grown to love very, very much. And I wish, you know, I'd listened to my mum when she told me that.
And do you feel much freer when you're performing, when you're on stage, whether that's doing stand-up or whether you're acting?
Yeah, absolutely. In any sort of live, yeah, whether it is acting or stand-up, because that moment that you are performing and you've got a live audience there, you are completely in control of what happens next. And that is such a thrill. It sounds quite self-indulgent, but I don't really care. Particularly with stand-up, you're like, I have the ability to direct this sort of room in this crowd where I want it to go. It's usually always with the intention to make them laugh, of course. There's no greater feeling, but it's great. It's close to godliness is the best way I can put it.
I've been out on that open road. Be my full-time daddy while I'm gone. Singing blues has been getting...
Ride There by Lana Del Rey. Now, Georgie, the next track you had chosen, we may not have been able to have played out on air, as the track was, I think, the one that you normally use when you're performing, and it does quite have a few swear words in the track. maybe before we talk about the track that you have chosen, could you explain a bit about the track when we can't play?
Yes, there is a track, I can't even say it because it's got a naughty word in it. And the reason I like it is it's a mate of mine sent it to me as a musician. He said, oh, you'll love this track. And it's filthy rock music. It's bad language. It's lots of naughty, suggestive things in it. And I just thought it would be the funnest music to come on stage to when I do stand up, because it's just funny and filthy. And sometimes that's all you really want. It's just stuff like that. It doesn't have to have meaning. It doesn't have to make a point. You know, sometimes things in life can just be funny and silly and gross.
You've been very successful as a stand-up comedian and actress too. Do you think you are at a time in your career where you are happy at the moment with all the things you have done, or do you think there's more you can do and more you can achieve as a stand-up and actress?
That's very kind of you to say. I am very happy because everything is progressing in the right direction, but I'm not done. As far as I see, there is so much further to go. I'm not even close to where I want to be, and that doesn't scare me or upset me or disappoint me. It just simply means I've got some more work to do and I get to keep doing what I really, really love. But no, we're not even close yet.
Are there things you can tell us about that are in the pipeline, or is that too hush-hush at the moment?
I don't think I can, actually, I'm afraid. There's a couple of cool things coming up, a couple of plans I have, and a few things I'm just absolutely determined to make sure happen. But I'm one of those people who will work, you know, themselves to the bone, and I will continue to work until I get all of those things.
So what is your next track that replaces the one we couldn't play, and why have you chosen it?
I believe it was Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, Never Get Old. For the same reason, actually, that I chose the one with the naughty word, is they're a wonderful band. They're a bit bluesy, they're rocky. I think they get called rockabilly a lot. And this song in particular, it's just such good fun. And again, so, you know, I've picked tracks with such depth and meaning of different bits in my life and all that. And sometimes it's like you just need things that are fun and easy and pick you back up. I feel we're culturally at the moment, there's a lot of overanalyzing of things. There's a lot of aggression, people being argumentative, things have to mean this, you have to be on this side of things and that. And sometimes I just want to go, I won't say the word, but I'll say, stuff it, you know, just be yourself, make mistakes, it's fine, and allow people to as well. And so there's something about their music that I think just embraces all of that.
Can we be there? Oh, just think of the time.
modern love so strange, said you never know. While I try my best, hey, to cover my eyes.
Nathaniel Rate, Live Fair and The Night Sweats, and a track that I think we may all want to maybe wish we would never grow old, perhaps. Now, Georgie, we come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Fastball, The Way. This is a one-hit wonder. I love a one-hit wonder. And they wrote this song. Now, I just loved it because I think my brother Joe, again, he's had quite an influence on my music taste. He introduced it to me when it came out. It's firstly an absolute banger to dance to. Something about it just makes you want to get up and move. It's beautiful. And then I spoke about it too on another program, and I was told there's a story behind it. So it was based on a true story of a couple who, I think both or one of them, had Alzheimer's, and they decided to just pack up and go, and they were never seen again. They just packed up the car, or is that a camper van or something, and just headed into the sunset and just traveled and just disappeared. And I can't think of anything quite so liberating or freeing when you've been given a sort of being told, you know, this is you're coming to the end, just going, ah, stuff it, let's just go with the person you love off into the sunset, never to be seen again. I find that almost, I find it romantic. And I find it moving, and I just find it utterly brilliant.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Georgie Morell, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
But where will they go?